Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What does business and industry want from our new college graduates? Let's go in-depth with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. President Putnam, what do businesses, corporations, what do they want from the Central College grad?
I ask this question all the time. It's probably one of the most frequent conversations I'm involved in. And I'll ask corporate executives or people who are leading major areas of companies what they're looking for, just like that. And not long ago, I was in a conversation with a senior engineer of a major technology firm, big, global, and had a great privileged opportunity to talk with him. And I said, what do you need? Because he hires engineers all the time. And he said, I need people who are humble, hungry, and people smart. I nearly fell off my chair. I just couldn't believe it. I said, seriously, say that again. He said, humble, hungry, and people smart. And I said, have you ever fired an engineer because he or she was not humble, hungry, or people smart? He says, yes. I said, have you ever fired an engineer for not being able to handle the math? He said, never in my career. So when you get into these actual conversations with people who are doing the hiring, who are working with teams of people who have middle-level or senior management roles, they need people who are adaptive. I asked a manufacturing CEO not long ago, what do you need? What is it you're looking for that I should be thinking about as a college president? And he said to me, people who are well-rounded. And I said, I don't understand what that means. Tell me more about what you mean when you say well-rounded. He says, well, we hire accountants. So he said, we can teach accounting all day long. I can't teach people to work in teams, to understand difference across people and programs and activities, to think in culturally sensitive ways and linguistic ways because we're a global company. He says, I need people who can be creative and energetic in the organization. Time after time after time, I hear the same story from people. So the challenge we have right now is that the pattern of society is to try to force educational institutions to have people major in a job title. And majoring in a job title is like putting the little white ball in the roulette wheel on one number and spinning it and hoping it works out. Because the nature of the workforce is changing so dramatically. If we don't teach our students to be adaptive and creative and energetic into their future, they'll never survive.
Well, and there are changes. I mean, you mentioned the changes that are happening. And I grew up doing carpentry work. But we're talking about 3D printing houses in the future. A lot of those manufacturing jobs, those good jobs, are going away. And some of the white-collar jobs are going to go away, too, because of artificial intelligence and computer programs. And so is that what you're talking about?
Well, it's completely true. So take, for example, what an accountant will do in the future. There's always going to be accountants, but they're going to be working more and more with automation and technology. So they're doing interpretive work, but they're not doing entries. They're not manipulating data in the same way because that'll be automated. The system will be able to handle that through artificial intelligence. So what we're saying is that accountancy is becoming data science and big data sets, large pattern recognition and interpretive elements to it. So suddenly an accountant and an actuary and a statistician, all these roles are beginning to merge into this larger context of interpretive analysis. And some kind of inquiry around what that means. It's not the reporting part, it's the analytic part that becomes important. So that's reshaping that job. You can talk to people who are in medicine, as I do often. We have a lot of people who have been in medical careers as graduates of Central College. And they'll talk about how much that field has changed. The diagnostics are getting so advanced that a lot of what they're doing is data interpretation. You know, they're receiving all these reports, and their work is to be an analyst and then provide the right therapeutic intervention for whatever condition is presented. But the bigger part of what they're talking about is the relational part, that the bigger role of a doctor in the future is relationship and being connected to a patient and understanding the psychology of that patient and what patient compliance needs to be, even though the therapeutics are available. If they don't comply with the prescription, then there's no healing, right, that occurs. So the ways in which these different professions, whether it's white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter. It's all changing because of the way in which technology writ large through automation, computerization, and artificial intelligence is going to reshape society.
So how do you teach that?
Well, there's a part of this that is about enabling students to be discerning about the work they're doing, to be self-reflective and aware, because it will change through the course of their lives. If the prognostication related to workforce future is real and true, what it's telling us is probably by 2035, 2040, half of all current work activity will cease through that time. Now, does it mean that no one's working? Well, of course not. It means work changes. It becomes something else, and we have different kinds of things to apply ourselves to. So the ability to adapt and change through all that becomes the most important thing. Most people who are in fairly rigid professional lives, could be engineering, could be medicine, it could be, accountancy, whatever else, those people are saying that the methodologies of today will not be the methodologies of the future. So as much as in the college context, we have a responsibility to prepare students for their first job, if we're not preparing them for all of the jobs that's a foundational element that they're going to have, then we failed as educators.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. Can you teach critical thinking skills, analytical skills, relationship skills? You've just mentioned they're all important.
Yeah, they are. So you can do it because you do it intentionally. So a way of doing the relational part of this, interestingly enough, is to be in a residential campus, right? So one of the most important things you can do is have a roommate. And no one thinks about that belonging to the educational experience, but it does. Being on a team for athletics. What's the big derivative result that you care about? Is that you learn resilience, you learn teamwork, you learn how to play a role, you learn how to cheer other people on. It's about being in a music ensemble and being present to other people and listening to other people and interpreting what they're doing in relationship to what you're doing. Those are foundational skill sets for all of life, including work. So the fullness of the experience we have at a place like Central College is to know that everything belongs to student learning. And that's what's exciting about the way in which we approach education. Likewise, on the analytic piece of this, or the ways that the methodologies that are present, it's not to teach them specific methodologies, it's the meta conversation. It's the conversation about how do you talk about methodology? How do you form methodology? How do we understand the history of methodologies in this particular profession? And how has it changed and adapted to this point? And what will change and adapt in the future? Now they're interpretive learners through life. That's a very different thing than preparing someone simply to enter into the workforce initially. It's giving them the skills and the experiences and the knowledge areas they need in order to project themselves into that future step by step.
And the one CEO that you opened with talked about humility, being humble. Mm-hmm. How is that taught?
Yeah, so it is the reality of putting people in front of each other and to share in the work but be accountable to the work, right? So humility comes in part from realizing that you have limitations. And many students who are coming out of high school, especially when they come to a place like Central College, they've been really successful. They are high achievers as they're coming in. And for some of them, they were the top of everything in their school. And they were the best athlete and the best musician or the best academic performer or whatever it might be. And so the reality is now you see a wider world, not just within the college, but particularly when students study abroad. Now their perspective, you just push back all the borders. And humility comes from understanding self in the world. So part of the journey of learning is to gain a proper perspective on one's capacities and roles and measures of influence. And by doing that, you set a person in context. So humility isn't about poverty of self-image. That's not what we're talking about. But it's to understand that there has to be some kind of intellectual modesty that's brought to bear on the work experience to say, I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, or to have the vulnerability to be with a supervisor and say, gosh, I'm having a real hard time with this, or to colleagues and say that I'm not sure how this is going to come out, or can you help me think this through and use each other as a sounding board. That's team learning. Team learning is fundamentally about humility. And that means I don't have to be the powerful thinker, the powerful person in this project, but I can be part of a group that's going to be smarter than I am alone.
And you'll find your role, what you're exactly at, right. Maybe some part of that you are the best at.
Right, exactly right. And so now bring that to bear, but respect other contributions at the same time. That's the great thing about learning, and learning in a context of a shared experience, of an academic community. It's not about me as a single contributor to something, saying I can do this and do it really well, but I have a really narrow band. It's to say I can range, and I can learn, and I can contribute, and I can apply pattern recognition across different kinds of experiences I've had in order to make sure that I'm contributing to everyone else's success. That's what employers are looking for. That comes certainly from the classroom and the lab and the studio. It also comes from the playing field and the concert hall and the recital hall and being in a student organization and studying abroad and doing undergraduate research. The breadth of experience contributes to pattern recognition. That kind of learning is adaptable broadly through life.
And so everyone around you is then a mentor.
If you see it as such, you are learning from everyone. So what I say to students as they're coming in is they will learn as much from each other as they do from the faculty. And that's true. Because they contribute to each other's learning in ways that we can't fully even imagine. We try to facilitate it. We try to encourage it and nurture it. But they are each other's teachers in the same way the faculty are.
But what you're telling me now is what I'm not hearing nationally. Mm-hmm. Now it seems they really want to pigeonhole kids really early. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that's a mistake.
Well, I understand from the standpoint that it's efficient. Right, and so we want to say to students when they're in eighth grade, Iowa has the I Have a Plan program, which I'm not inherently critical of, but there is this notion that if we just got them to do their plan, then they would not wander as much. No one has repealed human development. That's fundamentally the problem here, is that we watch students come in, and as they come in the door, they're still trying to figure it out. How many of us had it right at 17 or 18? It's very rare. And so what we try to say here is this is not about trying to pigeonhole students or to get them tracked. I mean, there's some countries that track students from the time they're 10. And this is, once you present a certain kind of test result, you're going to be in this lane, and that's your lane. Run your lane and stay in your lane, and that's the end of it. Liberty in America has always been about you can become anything you want to become if you work hard enough and you're capable. So What we want to do with students is put them in a place in which they can explore and discover and broaden their perspective and understanding, because they can become more.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Mark Putnam, president of Central College. I met a young woman the other day that was a chemical engineer. Mm. She went through school. She got her chemical engineering degree. She never wanted to be a chemical engineer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was sort of peer pressured, parental pressure. You're going to be a chemical engineer. She went and she did it, and she hates it. And now she's back in school doing what she wanted to do mm-hmm. her whole life.
Happens all the time.
Graphic design.
Right. Happens all the time. And that's because we try to force something before it can be forced. If we want to instruct, remember that the Latin root for instruct is to pack in. Education, to educate, Latin root is to draw out. Education is about drawing out from someone that which is within them. And so if we facilitate that properly, then as educators, not instructors per se, as educators, what we're trying to do is facilitate self-discovery. So my argument against this efficiency idea of, you know, getting kids to pick it when they're in eighth grade and then they're on this track and they don't ever stray from it, they never change a major, they're going to do that job, is that we're not drones. It turns out we're human. And we know what we know when we know it. But the advent of learning, the advent of discovery, yields something new, and a new pattern forms, and a new opportunity set is created. So there are people who come out of all kinds of majors and backgrounds, and they end up in places that are wildly different from what they anticipated. It happens all the time. It's called being human.
So if there's this national trend to get people narrowly focused and focus early, and you see it, and it's all this positive spin about, oh, mainly economic gains and a quick turnaround with respect to skills, and you're saying that's not working. How do you change that juggernaut?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or am I misrepresenting what's going on? Am I misunderstanding what's going on? This major trend in higher education.
No, it's completely true. What you are seeing is the manifestation of people who are sitting in conference rooms and trying to be policymakers, who have, on paper, designed their own world, a world in which they've defined a student as being a cog in a national and global wheel. And so if we get enough people trained in coding, if we get enough people trained in these areas, many of the things you see as studies that are done have absolutely nothing to do with students in terms of the workforce futures. It's all on the demand side. What do employers want and need? And so we hear this all the time, that there's this great demand for workers in these areas, for technology workers or engineering workers or something else, right? I look at policymakers all the time and I say, I've got a secret. Really, what's your secret? They get to choose. Students get to choose what they do in this country. And so we can have all of the needs assessments and the demands set for what workforce futures are. And we try to put the round peg in the square hole. We try to put the round peg of the student in the square hole of the workforce, not understanding that getting there is a mess. It's a messy journey for 17-year-olds who are trying to figure out how they want to be fulfilled. Their question is not, what is your demand for my work? Their question is, how am I fulfilled in my life?
So how do we make that work?
I think there's a point at which policymakers will exhaust themselves pounding on that anvil, that they will realize it is unproductive. And they may have to go all the way to exhaustion on this, realizing that in the end, it's a failed policy attempt to force students in lanes. And whenever I have a conversation with a lawmaker, whether it's the state or federal level, and talk about this, I say, well, we're not going to take anyone's freedom away. I said, well, then why are you doing this? What's the point of trying to demand it? Now, that doesn't mean we don't create incentives and opportunities. So if you look at the STEM patterns that we have right now, there's a very high interest in STEM in elementary school. And when you look at it, it's a curve that drops all the way off at about ninth grade. So you see very, very high levels of STEM interest and activity and interest, all that stuff that's going on all through those elementary years. And I was talking to a teacher, as a high school teacher, and I said, why is that line curve? And she looked at me as if I had no idea that I had never thought of education. She says, because it gets hard. There's a point at which you hit ninth grade, and now algebra shows up, and trigonometry shows up, and chemistry shows up. And they actually have to do this. And so we all the time, you know, we have a conversation about engineering. And people say, well, I want my son or daughter to be an engineer. And I say, how are they doing with calculus? And I hate calculus. So I say, oh, we got a problem. Right? We hear from students, I want to major in computer science. Really? Why? Well, I love gaming. Okay, that's not math. Computer science is fundamentally mathematics. So STEM is great when it's play early on. And it's active, and it's fun and interesting. And to the extent that we're driving for STEM literacy, brilliant. Every citizen in this country should be literate on science, technology, engineering, and math, if for no other reason to be active participants in what's happening in our future. They should be literate on that. But to be able to be working in those kinds of professions and fields, that is not for everybody. And the attrition rates that we will see if we drive people into patterns they're not finding welcoming, it's just going to mean that we're exhausting a lot of resource where it shouldn't be applied. So yes, there are some who do not aspire sufficiently, and we need to encourage their aspiration so that they can see that opportunity and test it and try it. But for those who aren't going to go down that path, there are enormous roles for them to be successful in society. If we're doing this properly, we facilitate their success, and with that, society's success.
Thanks to Mark Putnam for contributing to the program.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIA KRLS.